This is Luke Hansen, Associate Editor of America, and I'm at the Los Angeles Religious Education Congress. And this afternoon, I'm sitting down with Clementine Bordeaux. Clementine is Tsingu Lakota and an enrolled member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota. She attended and worked for the Jesuit-sponsored Red Cloud Indian School on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. And she has been active in both youth ministry and higher education. Clementine, thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So first, I just wanted to ask about your identity, both as Tsingu Lakota and as a Catholic. And if, when you were growing up in Pine Ridge, if you ever felt any pressure to choose between the two of them, or if it was always something that was more integrated in your life, what was your experience of that?
Well, I was raised on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and my parish was the Sacred Heart Parish, which is located right in the town of Pine Ridge. And my grandmother worked for the church as secretary and did a lot of other administrative things. So it was a constant in my life, going to church with her, with my family, as well as there was a really big revival of traditional Lakota ceremonies. So fortunately, I was raised after Vatican II, so I was able to have a lot of culture within the church. I learned a lot of Lakota hymns, and there was smudging and drums and just a lot of things that really made it feel like home when I was learning more about the Catholic faith. And then also, at the time when I was going to school at Red Cloud, there were a lot of Lakota history, Lakota language, Lakota spirituality, Lakota culture classes. So to me, it always was just hand in hand. They were both the Catholic faith and Lakota spirituality were a part of my life, and they complemented each other. But there were times where I struggled with both of those identities. It was, unfortunately, shortly after I was confirmed as an adult in the church, and my mother told me a story about limbo, and I had an older brother that died before he was baptized, and so she was saying how limbo, that practice or that thought didn't really exist anymore in the Catholic Church. And I remember being like a junior in high school and thinking, how could the church do that? And it really made me angry, and so I really started to fall away from the church and just question why an institution would do that. I mean, obviously, when I was a junior in high school, I wasn't thinking the institution is, you know, the evil or anything. I just was really confused. When I went away to college, I had a lot of friends that were Christian, and I joined a gospel choir in college, and that really helped me start thinking about Christianity more broadly and realizing that it really is about fellowship and being in community, and that's something that I was missing. And so when I came home after college and had the opportunity to become the youth ministry coordinator, I was excited because I really wanted a way to help build that community as a Lakota Catholic. And I knew that that was something very special.
In October 2012, you had the opportunity to travel to Rome to attend the canonization of St. Kateri Tekakwitha. Why did you make the trip? Why was it important to you?
I grew up knowing about Kateri Tekakwitha, and I remember I've always had one of her little medallions where it said Blessed Kateri Tekakwitha. And even when I was going through confirmation, I remember one of my peers chose Blessed Kateri Tekakwitha as her name. She was always in the back of my mind, and it was a household thing. We would pray to St. Kateri, or she wasn't St. Kateri then, but praying to Blessed Kateri. And when I started hearing about the canonization, or that the church was going to canonize her as a saint, I started looking online just about different articles, and I'm really a big supporter of online media because I think people feel the need to talk back to things. And so I started reading comments on different articles, And there was a lot of anger and negativity, especially from, I think, from people in my generation. And the only thing I could think about was, would they be saying these ugly, nasty things to my grandmother, who was a very devout Catholic? And I made up my mind that I wanted to go, and I wanted to be able to use that experience to tell one side of the story, to show how Native people have utilized the Catholic faith to better themselves and better our community. It's still a struggle for a lot of people, and it's still a lot of really tough dialogue to have about having a Native American saint from the Native American perspective. But I think it is really important that I did experience that, and that now I'm able to come back and have conversations about the canonization.
What do you think the relevant, you know a lot about Saint Kateri, and you helped teach a course about her. Mm-hmm. So what do you think her relevance is today for Catholics, and especially for Native Americans who are also Catholic?
Although she is the patron saint of ecology, which I think is very vital in our current times, because our planet is being overused, and there are a lot of things that are really going to affect us for future generations. But I think her story, aside from the ecology aspect, she was herself through and through. She was a Native woman, a Mohawk, and she understood and loved Jesus. And I think that we could learn a lot from her, and just being proud of who we are in whatever aspect that is. And she went full forward. She understood something about the Catholic faith that I think other Native people are just now starting to understand, and vice versa. She understood that Jesus loved and cared about her as a Native woman even before other people did. So I think that we have a lot to learn from her. And she was so young, and she had gone through some horrific things of losing her family, having to escape persecution. I think she just has a lovely story to tell us about perseverance and overcoming adversity.
You mentioned that when you came back from college, you took on this youth ministry job at Red Cloud Indian School. Can you tell me a little bit about your work at the Catholic parishes on the reservation, and either some of the successes or challenges that work involved?
I remember being extremely worried about going home after graduation. My undergraduate degree is in theater. And I thought, a lot of people would be like, oh, you got your bachelor's degree. Oh, it's in theater. But I did that purposefully, looking back, because I wanted to do something I was really passionate about. But I learned a lot being in theater about being able to just, the performance goes on. You can't stop. And teamwork, and being able to just keep going. And those skills really helped me in being youth ministry coordinator, and have actually helped me my entire life since then, because you always have to be creative and think out of the box. And so when I was a youth ministry coordinator, a lot of times what I saw working at home on the reservation was that youth just needed a place to come and be youth. So I tried really hard to create activities, just safe spaces. I worked in Porcupine, and we would do a movie night every week. And I would try to show Native films and things that the youth might identify and help bring up their own, self-esteem, or that someplace that they could just come and have fun. And then because I was working for the Catholic parishes, I also did a lot of the confirmation classes. I organized the confirmation retreats. And I just tried to do things that both incorporated culture and faith, and just trying to let kids be kids. And my second year I worked in Oglala at Our Lady of the Sioux, and that was one of the best places to work. The youth, they would just come every week consistently, even though they can challenge you. They really helped me see and understand myself better as a Lakota person, but also that they needed role models, and they needed that place to come and just be a youth.
Right now you work as an academic advisor University of California, Los Angeles. And one of the areas that you focus on is the recruitment and retention of Native American students at UCLA. What are some of the challenges that Native students face at UCLA in your experience?
Well, currently, Native Americans make up less than 1% of the student population at UCLA, and UCLA is a really huge university, and so we work really hard to make sure that Native students are successful and also contributing to community. So it's not only about being a good student, but it's also being a part of the service community and giving back and learning more about yourself as a contributor to that larger Native community. And then you also have to think about Los Angeles has the second largest urban Native population in the United States. And that is because of relocation that happened in the 1950s. And so there's also a very diverse Native community. So the thing that we also have to work on with our students is understanding how diverse the Native community is in Los Angeles, and to be proud of themselves, you know, whether you're Lakota or Navajo or Chumash or you know, Anishinaabe or Lummi or Yakima. Like, there are just so many different Native communities, and that we all are there to help and support each other. And then also for students that are coming from off-reservation, coming from a reservation myself, I try really hard to make sure that they feel like they have a support system and that they have a place that they can feel at home, and just being there for the students as much as I can, as well as challenging them. I think I'm sometimes like their mom. Every time I see them, I'm like, are you going to class? Are you doing your homework? That was one thing that my mom always, every time I would call home when I was in college, she'd be like, did you go to class today? Or she'd be like, and then she would tell me to remind my friends too. Remind so-and-so that they're there to go to school. So that's one thing that I really try to do with my students as well, is just remember that they're there to get an education, but also trying to help with these other experiences.
Do those students in your experience face challenges related to the type of education they're receiving and the world that they move in? Like, do any of them come from traditional families where there's some ambivalence about them going away to college? And how do you counsel students who face something like that?
It's difficult. There are times when I go home and I feel really defeated because I don't know exactly what to say to a student when they walk into a classroom and they're the only Native person in that classroom, and to have to tell them, you know, every other class you go to is probably going to be the same. But I do remind them that they go into that classroom with twice as much knowledge as anyone else in that room, because they carry with them their traditions, their culture, and a history that isn't normally taught in regular United States education. So I think I just try to find ways to encourage them to be who they are, in whether they're in psychology or sociology or environmental science, to always try to tie it back to themselves. Even though it might not be an American Indian Studies class, there is a way that they could tie it to themselves culturally. And so that's one thing that I really try to encourage students to do, is just to always, always be mindful of who they are as a Native person in the classroom and to tie it back to themselves culturally.
When you've taught in the Native American Studies department, what are some of the main topics you've covered?
So I've been at UCLA for 3 years, and I didn't teach the first year because I was just kind of getting a handle on being a part of the campus. And then last year I taught the class on St. Kateri, and then this year I'm teaching a Native film and representation class. So I'm really curious and want to have more conversation and dialogue around representation and stereotypes. So that is the class that I taught this quarter.
You know, in some ways, that's something that comes into public view from time to time. There are these public debates about appropriate usages of Native images. So what are, from your experience and your knowledge of this area, what are a couple, really poor examples of way that Native images have been misappropriated or misrepresented?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the bad examples in your experience?
So if just thinking maybe in the last 5 years, of course, Johnny Depp's Tonto is a poor representation. I have not seen the film, but I've seen enough of the images to know that it's not okay. And then as much as I, you know, that my inside tween would love to watch Twilight every waking day, I think the representation in the Twilight films of Native people is still problematic. I mean, they're at least they hired Native actors, right? But there's still some things that are really problematic in the way those images were created. And then another love-hate relationship I have is with James Cameron's Avatar. I think there's a lot of tribal representation and stereotypes that he embodied in the blue aliens that he created that are also problematic.
Are there good examples out there where... yeah, this has been done in a way that has been faithful, yeah, mm-hmm. to Native traditions and has involved, yeah, Native people in developing these images?
Well, I think the Schimmel sisters that play basketball for Louisville, I think the way they've carried themselves and the way the media has carried them has been really positive and the way they've gotten support both from the university they're attending as well as the NCAA tournament, I think that is a great example of how to represent Native people. And then I also, films that are less, you know, in like blockbusters or the larger theaters, but Sundance Film Festival has a Native lab, and there's been some really amazing films that have come out of there. There is a Mare filmmaker named Taika Waititi who's done some really fun kind of humorous films that have been really great. Sterling Harjo has done some difficult films but have had positive representation in his films that he's made. So just Barking Water by Sterling Harjo, Boy by Taika Waititi. I would also probably... as much as I didn't really like the character, but when Adam Beach was in Law & Order SVU, I thought it was interesting that, you know, they had this Native actor playing a descendant of one of the Mohawk construction workers. And so there are these little tidbits all across media that are becoming more popular, and it's just being able to support those images as opposed to supporting an image like Tonto.
One of the debates that has happened in the world of sports in this country has been the mascot of the football team from Washington. And at one point, the owner of the Washington Redskins had even claimed that he had the support of Red Cloud Indian School, the school that you attended, and because of a connection with an organization that had done some fundraising for the school several years ago. Well, Red Cloud responded in a pretty forceful way, saying that in no way do we support this mascot, and we find it demeaning. So I'm just interested in your own take on this and about the public debate that's happened around that mascot.
Well, I think in saying, while I spoke to, you know, one Native organization, you know, 10 years ago, or however long ago, that never equates okay, because there are 562 federally recognized tribes in the United States. So saying you know one is not saying you know them all. And I think it's more so the language of that team's name. It doesn't affect you as a Native person so much living on a reservation, because there are more important issues. You're dealing with poverty, you're dealing with substance abuse. But when now living off reservation, I think about how that image is affecting non-Native people who are in control of policies, who are in control of laws that affect Native people. And I think that's what's more important, because it lends to the idea that Native people are no longer in existence. So when a law or policy is created that will affect a Native person, and it's a non-Native person who has no idea about Native people, and then they think, oh, well, we'll just call them that R word. Or, you know, they don't look like how they look that mascot looks. So what does it matter? They're assimilated anyway. And not understanding that we're still alive and breathing and have a culture and we have a say and we have language. And if you came to the reservation and called any of my nieces or nephews that R word, I would probably get violent with you because that's my family. And so that's kind of why I think it's so hard to understand, because the image that it creates in non-Native people who are in control of laws and policy and things that affect Native people, it creates something negative in their minds. You know, it may not affect me trying to have a job to keep my lights on the reservation, but it's going to affect me when you as a non-Native person don't think we exist anymore because of mascots like the Washington R word.
Clementine, it's been an honor to speak with you. Thank you very much for your time today.
Yes, thank you so much.